10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
And there we are, in the middle of it. And now we're up against it. On Tuesday, you and I are going to have to return to adulthood.
What wasn't broke. Poor Cracker Barrel, they got a little too woke. Trump told Cracker Barrel, put the old white guy back on the logo. Now Cracker Barrel's gonna do it, 'cause their stock price got too low.
Yeah, a tribute to Julie Messino. Julie Messino epitomizes everything that you and I don't like about spreadsheets. She's a human spreadsheet. You looked at her LinkedIn, and you would see that she's had too many jobs. And then somehow or another, she went from Taco Bell to Cracker Barrel, and things did not go well. What could she possibly have learned at Taco Bell International? She was head of the international division, that she could apply to Cracker Barrel. Answer, nothing. Hi, it's about 8 minutes past the hour, coast to coast, Walter M. Sterling. It's a national radio show. That means we have to use network tones. What? Yeah, right before I do a break, there are invisible tones, inaudible tones that only computers can hear. And at this time, at radio stations across the country, only computers are available to hear them. It is an unbelievable phenomenon. That on Sunday night, when so many of us use the radio, love the radio, radio is God's gift to entertainment, so many of them are on a computer. This station that you're listening to me on right now, I promise you, there isn't anybody in the building. Isn't that terrifying? If you're in the building and you're running this show, I'd love an email from you to prove it. Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. Former Rudy Giuliani, the great Rudy Giuliani, a great man, a great American, was seriously injured in a car wreck this weekend. Seriously injured. And it would be hard for me to tell you how much I respect Rudy Giuliani for these moments.
The tragedy that we're all undergoing right now is something that we've had nightmares about, but probably thought wouldn't happen.
Those were his first words at his first press conference after the attacks, the murderers on our country on September 11th. These were his first words at the press conference.
The tragedy that we're all undergoing right now is something that we've had nightmares about, but probably thought wouldn't happen.
He's 81, and he was hospitalized with a fractured vertebrae, multiple cuts and bruises, including injuries specifically to his left arm and lower leg, after his rent-a-car was hit from behind. Mayor Giuliani was flagged down by a woman. Listen, he was being a hero. He's always been a hero. Mayor Giuliani was flagged down by a woman who was a victim of domestic violence prior to the accident. He rendered assistance, contacted 911, remaining on the scene until responding officers arrived to ensure her safety. And then the former mayor was a passenger in a Ford Bronco being driven by some guy. As police responding to the domestic violence incident on Interstate 93, the Bronco was struck in the back by a Honda HR-V driven by 19-year-old Lauren Kemp. And both vehicles ended up barreling into the median. Oh, my gosh. She jammed his car, pushing both of them into the concrete median of the highway. Giuliani, Goodman, Kemp were taken to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. However, Giuliani's injuries were severe enough that he's going to be in the hospital for a while, for probably 2 or 3 weeks. The mayor has great spirits. He survived 9/11. Fractured vertebrae. Fracture. He has a broken back. He's 81. I wish him well, because let me tell you, I happened to live in Manhattan on September 11th, and I am sharing with you the fact that the people of New York City would not have lived through that if he was not the mayor. Because there are certain times when you have to stop being cute. You have to stop with the nonsense. And you have to actually have a real mayor, a real boss, a real president, a real father. You have to have a real grown-up in the job. And Giuliani was a real grown-up that day, that week, that year. He was America's mayor. That was the nickname he got 20 years ago, America's mayor. And every night, he got on TV and he told us what was going on and what they were doing. And then when he got off the air, I didn't know it at the time, but he was doing the press conferences exactly half a block from my home. And there was a park near there, kids' playground. And every night when he got off the air, he went into the kids' playground late at night, sat there quietly, meditated on the horror show that he has to manage and deal with. He was close to it. He was on Barclay Street, which is a block from the World Trade Center, when it happened. He knew everything that was going on. Plus, he was the mayor. And they had to tell him everything that they were going to do, and he had to say it was okay or not. He was a great mayor then, because he stayed calm. And he had been in the office long enough to have built up his credibility. It was at the end of his term, his second term. And it was up for, he was not up for election. There was this Green guy, some guy named Green, and Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg. It was election. It was time for election. It was election day, or the next day was election day. And Bloomberg obviously won. Now, Giuliani, they delayed that for about a week, the election for a week, but not much longer. They made a very smart decision, which was to not say, you know what, we're going to suspend the election, just let Giuliani stay in office. That would have been against the democratic process. And in New York City, there are always extraordinary events. Nothing comes close to that. However, Giuliani managed to keep the city calm and managed to insist that by his example, we stay orderly. There was no looting. There was no trouble. We knew not to cause any more trouble. I live 30 blocks north of the World Trade Center, 30 blocks. And I will never forget, about an hour after it, the people who worked down there started to walk uptown. There were no subways, there were no cabs. They just started to walk uptown in a zombie-like trance. And I looked out the window onto 3rd Avenue, which took you right to the World Trade Center, out the window to 3rd Avenue. And I saw thousands of people in business attire walking up 3rd Avenue covered in ash. Covered in ash. Head to toe. In a daze. Just walking. And I started to take a picture of the crowd. And one guy in the crowd shouted at me, "Don't you dare take a picture." Okay. That was September 11th. And it was because of Rudy Giuliani going on TV, knowing what was going on, having a profound relationship with the police department and the fire department, that things were handled as best they possibly could. And now Giuliani has a broken back. And his son Andrew says, thank goodness he's doing okay. Well, I pray for you, Mr. Mayor. You're the real mayor. In Manhattan, it's not unusual to run into the past mayor, to run into a celebrity. It's not unusual. And I've seen him more than once on the street, and I always look at him and I say the same thing. I say, oh, the real mayor. And he smiles. And he says, thank you for that. It's about 17 past the hour. It's a coast-to-coast live radio show on Labor Day weekend. I am not pre-recorded. I didn't take the day off. I'm not lazy like everybody else at this station. I actually come in, and you and I get to spend time with each other, which means I want to know how you doing. How you doing? My number is 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. That is a live line. When you call that, you go on the radio, you can talk to America. Think about that horror. Think about that. Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday night.
This is Matthias Boehm-Bell. Coming up, my Hollywood report on movies, live on Sterling, every damn night.
Aspiring dancer and teacher nabbed. Details later, strippers on the loose, Sterling every damn night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here with stories of awkwardly hugging people. I'm not a big hugger.
And I'm just an awkward hugger.
We'll tell you about it coming up on Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I dive into the latest NYPD scandal involving NYPD parking valets, coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
You want me to read this? Well, okay. The drive-thru brew making its return, I guess, from the vault. You're not going to hear this anywhere else. It's on the way, coming up on Sterling every damn night.
When you probably should be sleeping, that's when Walter comes creeping. Just turn off the light, 'cause it's Sterling. If you hear a bunch of complaining and a lot of mansplaining, your dial is set right. It's Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night. This show is on six nights a week. There's the threat. Six nights a week. And you can hear it on the Audacy app, AUDACY. Best company with the stupidest name, AUDACY. And I'm on every night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Time. Every night. Every damn night. Well, good evening, Walter M. Sterling. And here we are in the thick of it, ladies and gentlemen. We are in the thick of adulthood. This is when the adulting of the year begins. It's a horror for you and me. What does it mean? It means that if your kid isn't already back in school, they're going to be back in school this week. No kid should have to go to school before Labor Day. That's insane, and a fairly new phenomena, I suspect. Right?
Didn't it used to always be after Labor Day? Yeah,
that's what I thought. Do you know in Atlanta, they go back to school the first week in August? Now, what does that mean? It means those schools had better damn well be air conditioned, and we need to be back on WSB. I was on WSB for a long time. And then, who screwed that up? Drew Anderson. Right, Drew Anderson and Peter Spriggs screwed that up.
Well, you know, we felt we needed a little more local news. We felt we needed a little more local news. We needed every other sentence to start with the word Peachtree,
yeah, then it's local news. Shut up. If the local news was so damn important, why is it that McDonald's does equally well in every city? Explain that to me, Smarty. Explain that to me. Anyway, I don't know why school would start before Labor Day. It makes absolutely no sense, especially when 40% of the schools in America are not air conditioned. Why would you do that to the teachers? Why isn't one teacher union negotiation have a clause that said classrooms must be air conditioned? Why is that? That's because the union leaders' offices are air conditioned. It's not a day-to-day problem for them because they're not standing in a classroom dealing. No head of a teacher's union is an active teacher. Maybe some sad little local union, but no national union, no regional union. And therefore, it doesn't touch them personally. They're not sweating all day. And I find it particularly disgusting. See if you agree with me on this. I find it particularly disgusting to go into a school where 90% of the school is not air-conditioned, but the principal's office is. The secretarial pool, the administrators, are air-conditioned. Their doors are sealed shut to not allow out any air conditioning. And yet the classroom with the second graders, the two professional teachers, it's 90 degrees. But more terrifying is something that my kids told me. I don't know how come this is becoming news now. My kids told me this 10 years ago. They told me that they had a project due. One of them would say, I have a project due this Friday, but if I can't get it done, I can hand it in Tuesday. What? I have a project due Friday, but the teacher will let me hand it in Thursday. What? And then I realized that for the past 10 years or so, in most public schools, it is possible for the children to negotiate deadlines. Now, I know you're very old, but if your memory works at all, can you remember being able to negotiate the deadline for a test or a paper or a school project or making a diorama? Making a diorama. Do you remember being able to negotiate that deadline? No. Part of the education, part of the process, was hitting the deadline. Much credit was given for just getting it done. Now, they get it done whenever they want. They go in and negotiate it. And then, more terrifying, is this wacky notion that grades can be adjusted for who's getting the grade. One kid gets an A on that paper or that test, another kid gets a C. And somehow that balances out, and it's called equity. You realize that 50% of the kids in California, in Los Angeles school district schools, in Los Angeles school districts, 50% of them do not graduate. They can't pass the region tests of the state of California. Many parent groups, teacher groups are saying, why do they have to just keep being given tests? There must be a different way to learn. There must be a better way to learn. Therefore, we're just going to ignore the testing. We're not going to make them take tests. Now, that's a two-part problem. I, Walter Sterling, agree that the way kids are being taught today doesn't come close to matching their social cultural norms, that the way school is taught today is 55, 60 years old. It needs to be upgraded, but not put on the side until we figure it out. And that's what many school districts are doing. We're like, okay, the kids aren't learning this way. We don't know how to teach them anymore. We've kind of lost our way. Let's just not teach them anything. Let's just not give them tests. Let's just not do the work. And the result is this horror show called executive functioning doesn't work. Now, what do you mean executive functioning? You're teaching them to be vice presidents? No, that's just the order in which you put things. It's Sunday in America. Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday.
Boom, boom, Hollywood. Sterling every damn night.
All right, there's Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood in Los Angeles, in California. Welcome to the big show, the big network show. This is the Sunday night show. The weekday shows should be national. They should be on all the Odyssey stations. Yet hundreds of bureaucrats are sitting on it rather than saying, well, wait a minute, we could take this show, which is often number one in all the demos that matter, including 18 to 49-year-olds. Hey, program director, you hear that? Wake up. You guys running talk stations? I'm number one 18 to 49 men often. Do we talk about sports, Mateus? No, we do not. No. Yet somehow or another, I achieve that. I don't know why or care. Let's just keep praying that it never stops. And they could put this on every Odyssey talk station, of which there are about 20, Drew Anderson, and start to sell it as a network show, because from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on any Odyssey station, they don't do anything except for KMBZ and KDKA when KDKA runs sports. KMBZ, run by a brilliant man named Alan First, who used to run the big radio company in Australia. And why you left, Alan, I will never know. But Alan First is a brilliant guy, and he has a bigger voice than I do, Mateus, so he intimidates me easily. And he manages to be number one late at night. Son of a gun, you can do this. The rest of them, you know, 10th, 20th, 50th, they don't care. And I said, well, why don't you put the show on every night? And then you could have big numbers all day, and it would help morning drive. That's a strategy that is elusive, apparently. Very elusive. But about
I'm
you,
I'm sorry
Mateus,
to hear it.
Oh, it's exhausting.
Well, you know, and this is why I'm sorry to hear it, because you have great poignancy in the things you talk about. It touches the listener. They respond. When you, at the opening of this show, started to talk about Mayor Giuliani and the fact that he was, at the right moment, the man he needed to be and the man we'd all like to be in that given situation. I can't think of a more heroic thing that we'd all like to be, and could we be in that situation? We don't know until we're there, but I think that shows the measure of a man in a key crisis situation. Here on the West Coast, where we've got our head in the clouds, we talk about movies. We probably can't name more than four New York mayors, aside from Giuliani. Of course, Ed Koch, Jimmy Walker, Fiorella LaGuardia, maybe. But Jimmy Walker, of course, I've mentioned before. But when I think of how that man and that crisis moment responded, was something that went beyond responsibility and was just what it needed to be when not only New York City and its citizens needed to hear it, but the rest of the nation needed to hear it, trying to figure out what the heck was going on. So these are moments that touch people, and if there's anything great about radio, it's radio that communicates with the listener, and your ability to share that is why this program should be on the network every night of the week.
Where do I send the check again? I forgot where you told me to send the check, Mateus. But I know that
I mean it.
It might even arouse my wife. It's hard to say. I might have to make her listen to what you said many times. I'm not even going to waste the time with my daughters. They'll say that's a lot of nonsense.
Let me just give you a contrast. In the movie world, we have a situation off the coast of Ibiza.
What?
Where a beautiful 27-year-old supermodel. Now, this is Ibiza, is off the Spanish coast, you know, off of the Spanish Iberian Peninsula. It's right. A very popular party island with all of the cognoscenti and those that have way more money than we'll ever have. So sitting on this yacht with this 27-year-old Italian supermodel from Brescia, gorgeous gal, Victoria Ceretti, is her boyfriend, who is Leonardo DiCaprio. Now, last week...
Du jour.
Last week... yes, right. Last week, the paparazzi and maybe even the mamarazzi were out there with their cameras and managed to photograph pictures of Leo on the back of this yacht, on the back of this yacht, rather. Mm. He's got this beautiful girl in tow. I don't know if she's in a dinghy or in a room, but the pictures only show Leo, and he's sitting on the back of his yacht on the Spanish Iberian coast, incredibly bored. He looks so completely bored with life. And when I compare that to the work of someone like Rudy Giuliani, it shows you how sometimes artificial and horrible Hollywood can be. Anyway, I do have a movie review, but I just wanted to make that comparison.
Well, I appreciate what you said, as fabricated as it was, but I'm grateful for that. The fact is that this has happened in most industries since the long forgotten depression of 2007. It was a depression. They can call it whatever they want. I mean, when Lehman Brothers employees go running out of the building with cardboard boxes, running to get out of the building, you know that things are not stable. Things are not going well. It looked just like the panic before the Great Depression. It was the same thing. It was the same kind of panic created by the same non-skilled workers, the same people who actually couldn't nail couldn't nail a nail into a piece of wood were the same people deciding on billions of dollars of whether or not the housing mortgage was legit. Not, it was horrible. But anyway, what has happened is fear has set into the financed American workplace. Most big companies are funded by venture capitalists, and venture capitalists have no interest in the product. They have an interest in what they're supposed to have an interest in, and is return on their investment. This has become critical in importance since 2007. And as a result, nobody wants to make a decision in any industry. They're all terrified of making a decision. But now I have decided to let you give your review.
Oh, okay. Well, great. Well, we've got a movie that has to deal with decisions, too. It's a story called The Roses, which is based on Tony McNamara's book, The War of the Roses. But this isn't quite a remake of the 1989 movie, which you may remember starred Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner and Danny DeVito. This opens with a seemingly perfect pair attending a meeting with a couple's counselor, which descends quickly into a witty and pointed exchange of vitriol, at which point the story of how these two met and fell in love and actually unravels and develops into the little resentments that slowly gnaw at each other until they're ready for the battle of their lives. Benedict Cumberbatch is the architect, Theo Rose, whose great building that he's built collapses in a storm, crushes his career, while his wife, Ivory Rose, played by Olivia Colman, becomes a success as a chef at a Mendocino, speaking of California, Mendocino Crab Shack that has rave reviews. The two then switch parenting roles with their children as their mood darkens between them, leading to battle after battle. We've got Andy Samberg in here, adding a little color, and the always funny, if not on the edge, Kate McKinnon is in the cast, offering some humorous moments amid the pithy dialogue as barbs are tossed with dagger-like precision. So anyway, it's fun to see these actors do what they do best. It was probably a little long and at times quite crude, but The Roses, as it's called, makes vitriol entertaining, and that's what's new at the movies this week.
Was anyone nude in the movie?
Not really. No. They were mostly dressed.
Were you disappointed?
Beautiful shots of Mendocino, though. Yes, of course I'm disappointed.
You were disappointed.
Who would be disappointed?
I don't know.
Of course. I'm only human.
How do we find your humanity on the internet?
It's Matias Bombal's Hollywood on Facebook. That's MATIASBOMBAL, apostrophe S, Hollywood like the city. Matias Bombal's Hollywood on Facebook. Thanks, Walter.
What I find so impressive about you is that you devote your spare time to refurbishing 100-year-old movie theaters, movie palaces, to refurbishing them, educating the community about them. Which was the latest one you've been working on?
Well, as you've mentioned, I've spent about 40 years doing it in different places all over the country. But right now I'm concentrating in a little town called Orinda, California, to the east of Oakland, over the hills. It's very different than Oakland, I can assure you. It's almost like Mayberry, this town. And there's a 1941 movie theater there with 750 seats with beautiful murals. And I program a lot of classic films and arts films there, and I go introduce them and plug this program so that people tune into it. But beyond that, it's nice to share the history of these wonderful places that a lot of people enshrine their lost youth. You know, they love their old movie theaters because maybe the baby kicked there for the first time, or the monumental first kiss happened in the balcony. And so it's good to save these places.
Yeah, you know? Or the baby got put in there for the first time. Now, listen, there's a Netflix series called Titans about the birth of the movie industry. Have you seen this?
Not yet, but I've heard quite a few things about it. I'm eager to see it.
I spent the day watching it. It's stunning. It's amazing. Matias Boom Boom Hollywood, thank you, sir.
Walter Sterling makes your evening weird. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn Sunday.
Her name is Brittany Fortenberry. Fortenberry. And yes, she was an aspiring dancer who loved showing off her, shall we say, marital apparitions and applications and toys to her students. Middle school teacher at Eminence Community Schools, 40 miles outside of Indianapolis, a rural place, Americana. And she bedded up to 10 students. Showed off her toys. Is that a good word to say? Toys? You know what I'm talking about. And her stripper pole. She had a stripper pole in her home. She's resigned, by the way, from being a teacher, and so far has been charged with inappropriate conduct toward two students, but they say the number will be growing. Lonely lady teachers. Frequently, you think of the perv shop teacher who's going after the young girls. How often is it that an attractive lady who should be able to find a wonderful gentleman, perhaps around her age, to enjoy a wonderful relationship? You expect to trust your teachers, right? Miss Fortenberry, apparently quite the showgirl on that wonderful stripper pole, which is a great way to keep in good shape. I highly encourage wives and girlfriends, a.k.a. wags, to do the same. From the champagne room, shedding a tear, it's Velo Hool. Strippers on the loose, Sterling every damn night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here with stories of awkwardly hugging people. I'm not a big hugger.
And I'm just an awkward hugger.
We'll tell you about it coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I dive into the latest NYPD scandal involving NYPD parking valets. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
You want me to read this? Well, okay. The drive-thru brew making its return, I guess, from the vault. You're not going to hear this anywhere else. It's on the way, coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
If you just spent the weekend with your spouse, did you finally get a good look at him?
I told the witch doctor to tune in the Sterling Show. I told the witch doctor to tune in the Sterling Show. And then the witch doctor told me where to go. He told me,
Hoo-ee, hoo-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang. Hoo-ee, hoo-ah-ah, Sterling every damn night. Hoo-ee, hoo-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang. Hoo-ee, hoo-ah-ah, Sterling every damn night.
Brewery. Oh, let's go axe throwing. Oh, let's go to an escape room. Let's pretend we're in prison. Oh, my friend wants to go to a magic show. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to sit around a craft cocktail with you guys and be like, I can really taste some pickle juice on this one. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, what are you doing? I'm eating an apple. What is this obsession with drinks that smoke and are blue? Blue is from Curacao Liqueur. Curacao Liqueur only triggers me to the horrible thoughts about the worst vacation I ever had. I believe that more truth about your partner comes out during vacations than at any other time of the year. Because at other times of the year, you and I have a lot of distractions. We have school, work, commuter time, weird commitments to relatives that we barely know. Somebody's getting married. What? We have to go to parent-teacher conferences, corporate conventions, conferences. But when you and I are stuck for a week or two or a month on vacation with our significant other, or as some people call them, brides, or other people call them husbands, that's when we get to see them in swimsuits in sunlight. And nothing can be hidden while in swimsuits in sunlight. I believe that the big mistake too many married couples make, and the reason it's a 50% divorce rate, is they take the vacation after the wedding. Take the vacation when you smell a wedding as a possibility. Maybe we should get married. I know, but first let's go to Bermuda. I know, but first let's go to South Sea Isles in Georgia. I know, but first let's go to Paris. Anything. You spend a week with somebody on vacation and you will know everything you need to know about whether or not they are viable marriage material. Am I right? Because, young lady, there you were sitting on the beach or next to the lake this weekend, last weekend, all of August. And all of a sudden, coming out of the water, you see this figure in trunks, not a Speedo, but in trunks. And as this figure gets closer to you, what do you see? Oh, my God, that's my boyfriend. That's my boyfriend. Holy crow. And I hear this creature coming out of the water looking at me going, hey, babe, we got any beer? We got any beer? And you realize this is your life choice. This is the choice you've made. Oh, but you did the smart thing and you decided to go on vacation long before you got married. Too many people go on vacation right after the wedding. Then it's too late. Because on vacation, you will find out a number of important facts that are never discussed. I never read them in women's magazines about how to behave. I never read them in women's magazines. It's a whole different thing.
How many genders are there?
Two.
What are they?
Male, female.
What about the people that say there's like 20 different types?
Well, there's two genders and a near infinite number of mental illnesses.
And there you are on vacation and you learn a variety of very important things. You learn how they negotiate time and deadlines. Going on vacation, coming back from vacation, it's all about time and deadlines. Getting to the airplane on time, sitting down on time, getting out of the airport on time. And there are basically two people in life when it comes to travel. Those who time it to get to the gate at the moment before they close the door. And the other people who, for some reason, want to sit in an airport for 3 hours. Now, I have spent half my life commuting for work, consulting work. And about half of my career was spent traveling for business. I love traveling for business. I know I'm not supposed to say that, but I've always loved, I love airports. I love airport lounges. I like business and first class on airplanes. I do not like coach. I like big real airlines. I don't like Spirit and Frontier. I like real airlines, American Airlines. I like Qatar Airlines. Oh, and the best one is the Australian airline. That's the best one. Of course, I can't remember it now, but it's probably because I've traveled too much and I can't remember things anymore. Like, anyway. But you will find out everything you need to know about somebody if you go on vacation with them, because you'll see how they deal with the stress of schedules. That's the first discovery. Then you will see what happens when they get to where you're going and they don't like the room. When you check into a hotel, the correct thing to do is once you get to your room is to call down to the front desk and say, I really appreciate the room. I know you're busy. Do you have a better room in our price range? Do you have a better room? There are some problems. Oh, really? What's the matter with the room? Ah, it's a lot of little things. You got a different room. You got one further away from the elevator, further away from the ice machine, closer to a corner, la, 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 la. See how they deal with that. See how they deal with the line at the rent-a-car. And what happens when the rent-a-car company says these magic words, we don't take debit cards.
What?
We don't take debit cards. There's a moment in hell, isn't it? God. These are just a few things that you will discover how your partner copes. Then you've arrived, you settled in, and now you found out that you're not properly dressed. You needed a jacket, or you needed a tie, or you needed a skirt. you needed real shoes, whatever it is, something goes amiss at the vacation location. And again, how does your partner deal with that? Even better, you get there, gentlemen, and you find out that the beach at this resort is a topless beach. And you would be very happy if your girlfriend was nude, partly nude, mostly nude. Half the beach is mostly nude. And you'll learn two things then. Will she become mostly nude? Or will she complain that all these other people are mostly nude? These are important things to know. Because when you say you're going to go out with the guys to Hooters, you will have a preview of how that's going to go. If you are at a resort and you find out it's a topless beach, do you go topless? You. 855-839-1210. That's my phone number. Would you go topless at a topless beach? In Paris, this wouldn't be a topic. It would just be done. I got engaged in Monaco, which is a topless beach. My beautiful wife, then fiance, was happy to be topless, proud to be topless. And then we honeymooned in Bora Bora, topless beach. She was proud to be topless. And the only other, oh, this was great. The only other woman on the beach who was topless was a Parisian, a Parisian. So here was this hot woman from Paris, topless, and my wife was topless, and I viewed that as all the reason in the world I needed to say, why don't the four of us have dinner together? Because we had this very important bond of nudity. Would you go topless at a topless beach? 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. Live, national radio show, 17 past the hour, Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night.
I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
And we're here to tell you about our life with 8 kids living in our old house. And today, just some awkward hugging stories. My wife's a big hugger.
I hug everybody, and I hug people when I'm mad at them more than I think I hug them when I like them.
I try and avoid the hugs. For example, at church today, a woman came in for a hug. I stick out my hand for the handshake.
Right. I did that last week in the grocery store. We were in the grocery store chatting it up with a friend, yes. You know, and he comes in and sort of kind of gives you the bro hug, which is, you know, where you grab hands, pull it in, you know, yep. 2 pats on the back and you're done. And then comes at me and I just kind of stick my hand as far out as possible and right. shake his hand, which just makes it more awkward than if I had hugged him in the first place. Yep. And I think that's my gift. I think my gift is whatever they want as far as a hug is concerned, I'm going to do the opposite and I'm going to make it weird.
I'm trying to not make it weird as well. I go for the handshake. Someone's coming in for a hug, and they give me the weird side hug.
Right, exactly. Like then, and when I do that, because I'm trying to avoid the, I don't know what I need to do, I don't know what I need to not do, I end up in their armpit, usually, because I just kind of like bow my head down, and I'm not the tallest person in the world, and then I end up in the armpit. But I think the funniest hug that I do is when I see people and I'm startled. It's like nervous laughter. I laugh at funerals. I laugh at things completely inappropriately.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I see someone that I don't really want to see, I go, hi, and I hug them.
Yeah.
Why do I do? I don't know. It's like
and I'm
a
over
protective
here handshaking
stance.
Everyone. I'm handshaking, keep my distance. No hug for you.
Right. And I mean, I don't hug everybody, but I do hug a lot more than you hug. But I hug people I shouldn't hug in that way. And that's just weird.
Here's a funny one. There was a foursome. You knew the women.
I knew them all. I knew everybody in the foursome.
Except the fourth guy.
But the fourth guy, I don't think I've ever spoken to him, but I know him as the husband of the second woman.
So listen to this. So tell us what happens. You come upon this foursome.
Right. So I hug my first friend that I haven't seen in probably 15 years. I give her a hug. I hug her husband. Oh, hey, hey. I hug the other lady in the group.
Right. And then, because you've hugged the one woman, you feel you have to hug the other lady.
Right. And the husband of the first woman, I would hug. I would hug him. He's someone I would hug.
So this leaves the fourth person, the man you don't know.
Yeah, I really don't know this guy. I think.
But you've hugged the other three.
I've hugged everybody else, and then I have to hug him. But I don't know what kind of hug I'm going to give him. We're not going for the bro hug because he's not my bro. We're not going for the side hug because he's not a little old lady that, you know, makes me feel like she could be maternal. So it's just like a full on. Let me just wrap my arms around you and hug you and make you feel weirder than I feel. And then everybody feels weird because everybody knows I really don't know the fourth guy. Why am I hugging on him?
But you thought it would be stranger if you left him out of the
hug. Because I couldn't leave him out. Then I'd have to shake his hand. Then it's hug, hug, hug. Hey, handshake. You know what I mean? And that's what makes it weird. And that's what, when you do that handshake, maybe he's going to side hug and make it even more awkward than just the regular hug was awkward, which it's all just embarrassing and weird. And if you walk up to me, just hug me, just like you do the work. Wrap your arms around me, hug me, because that's going to make me feel good. If I try to hug you, I'm going to give you the wrong kind of hug.
How about a virtual hug? I'm on Facebook at Dan Gaffney Show.
And if you want to find me, you can find me on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Dan and Becky giving hugs to Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I dive into the latest NYPD scandal involving NYPD parking valets. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
You want me to read this? Well, okay. The drive-through brew making its return, I guess. From the vault. You're not gonna hear this anywhere else. It's on the way, coming up on Sterling every damn night.
More nonsense. Sterling every damn night.
There's no doubt that the yachts on Below Deck are impressive, but the vessels and the crew may not be exactly what they seem.
A masculine man will never be attracted to a controlling, critical woman. The masculine thrives on respect and appreciation for his strength, but a controlling woman undermines that. He wants an ally, a wife, not a mother figure who treats him like a child. Constant criticism erodes intimacy and connection, as his natural response to hostility is to go into defense mode. If she restricts his freedom, it creates a breakdown in love, respect, and trust. Key elements for the masculine to fulfill his God-given purpose to protect and provide for the feminine.
The dilemma is that you may have married a woman who was supportive, wonderful, and very feminine, and then over time became more and more masculine, developed stars and brownie points at work, felt better and better about her work. And that took away loving, nurturing, supporting from you, a guy. The it's the challenge is to be able to be a true feminist. And this is the real test of whether or not you married the right person. This is the true test. And this test is rarely carried out. I will tell you exactly how to know if you, as a man, married the right woman. You ready? You say to her, you make a lot of money. You're doing great at work. I'd really like to stay home. I'll do all the home things. Whatever that is, you may have kids, maybe not, huge house, farm, apartment, whatever it is, there are home things to do, non-gender specific. You want to be able to say to your wife, I want to stay home. I think you like your job, you're making a lot of money, keep doing that. I'm going to quit, and I'm going to stay home. If both of those people are actual feminists, the way this has been promoted for 50 plus years, then neither should have a problem with that. There should be no hesitation. Your wife should say, you know what? I do like my work. I'm going to keep going to work. You stay home. Happy to do it. Great idea. Do you think that's what's going to happen in your marriage? Do you think that's what's going to happen in your home? And the other topic that I'd love for you to call in about and we'll chat about is when you go to a topless beach, do you expect your wife to be topless? You, young lady, when you go to a topless beach, are you topless? Because that is the culture. Or are you going to go against the culture and not be topless? I say, if you go to a topless beach, the local ordinance should be, you must, as a woman, be topless. You must. No varying, no maybe, you must be topless. And as a man, are you comfortable with your wife being ogled by strange strangers? 855-839-1210, live line, 855-839-1210, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night from sea to shining sea.
All right, Rudy Giuliani was seriously injured in a freak car accident in New Hampshire. Giuliani's 81. He was hospitalized with a fractured vertebrae and multiple cuts and bruises, including injuries specifically to his left arm and his left leg. The mayor was flagged down by a woman who was a victim of a domestic dispute. And he called 911 to help her, and he did not leave the area until he was sure the cops were there. The accident occurred on the 30th, and he's in the hospital. He's going to be in the hospital for 2 or 3 weeks, they say, because he has a broken back. What happened is a car slammed into the back of his vehicle, pushed both vehicles against the concrete median, and he got injured in a broken back. He's 81. Rudy Giuliani, the man who saved New York City after 9/11. If he hadn't been the mayor of New York, I was living there. I was 20 blocks from the World Trade Center. And if he hadn't been the mayor, the city would have never survived.
The tragedy that we're all undergoing right now is something that we've had nightmares about, but probably thought wouldn't happen.
There are great events that inspire greatness. And he was one of those rare people who rose to the occasion and beyond. Every night he came on TV, he let us know, as New Yorkers, what was going on, what could be done. They informed him of everything they were doing, and you know who they are. It was beyond a tragedy. I lost two, call them on the phone every day, friends. I lost two friends. And they lost brother, father, sister, husband. They were murdered. But it was Rudy Giuliani who took us through it with calm and grace. And remember, it was at the end of his term. He had already been mayor twice. Elections were either that day or the next day. Must have been like the next day. That was a Monday. Yeah, so it would be the next day. Is when the elections for a new mayor were, and it was 2 months away from election day. It was September, so it would have been in November, la, la, la. Okay. And what he did in those 2 months was stabilize the city, made it possible for Bloomberg to win, thank God. And that's what he did. But he was at the end of his term. And in his mind, he was halfway on vacation, and all of a sudden, he had the biggest challenge of his life. And he rose to it, and he met it. And he was the real mayor. And then he became the mayor of America. And every night he held a press conference. But I also know that after the press conference, he walked to a park on the same block where he was and meditated and talked to God. Walter M. Sterling, good evening. Walter M. Sterling, exciting to be with you, of course. It's 40 minutes past the hour, 40 minutes past the hour. And now, my advice is don't go on vacation for the first time on your honeymoon. Don't go after the wedding. Go months before the wedding, because you're going to find out everything you need to know about your significant other by going on a vacation. not by going to marriage therapy or to having a long chat with an Episcopalian priest. No, you're going to find out everything you need to know by going on vacation. And once you're on vacation, you're going to find out how they deal with schedules, trouble at the hotel, trouble with the food, trouble with restaurants, expectations versus reality. What does the website show about the place you're going versus the reality of once you get there? All of these things are revealed on a vacation and nowhere else. You don't go on vacation with that person until after the wedding. You have been distracted for months because of the wedding, the planning, who gets invited, where do they sit, how the hell are we going to come up with $100,000 for a wedding, because that's what they are, $100,000, all of that. You need to go on vacation first. As soon as the dating starts to smell like permanent and exclusive, figure out a way to go on vacation together. Because the final test will be the following, Mary. Mary, Rebecca Canner, this is going to be the ultimate test. In the sunlight, he's going to have on a pair of trunks at the beach or the pool or the lake. And he's going to start walking toward you. And as he's walking towards you, at first you don't realize it's him. It's him. Oh my gosh, this guy I've committed my life to, mostly not married yet. And then you hear this, you hear his mating call. Hey, Mary, yeah, we got any more beer in the cooler? We got any more beer in there? And that's when you will truly know if this is the right one for you. Hey, Mary, got any beer in there? But under the soda. Under your soda, under your sparkling water with the lemon jello sparkling water. Oh, God, is that the worst tasting crap? The sparkling soda, is that the biggest scam ever? I know, we're going to charge you just as much as real soda, except we're going to put in almost no flavoring. We're going to save a fortune and package it up as vaguely healthy. I want the lemon jello. I don't want any of that crap. That's your stuff. That's for your sister. That's what your sister likes. I want the beer. The Heineken. It's the get the good stuff. We're on vacation. Why not? Why not bring out the Heineken, the foreign beer? Why don't we do that? Made in the USA. Why don't we do that? And then you're going to see who you're with. When you're in the bright sunlight, the ultraviolet rays, and the trunk. And then you see over there, there's this other guy who looks better in trunks. And there's another guy who looks better in trunks. And there's your guy who looks like he's in cutoff jeans to hide the problems. And he never wants to take off his Hawaiian shirt to hide the problems. Am I right? Have I got this right? And then you're on a topless beach. You're on South Beach in Florida. Good idea. Monaco, Bora Bora, anywhere in France. Everywhere in France is a topless beach. The fountains in Paris, those are topless beaches. Everywhere it's topless. And your significant other says, hey, how come you're not topless? All these other women are topless. That's your first sign of trouble. He wants you to be topless. That's your first sign of trouble. He's proud of you topless, which means he's proud of you being gawked at. Think all of that through, Mary. Think if this is really the one for you. It will only be discovered on a vacation. Oh, and then on the vacation, check out a few other things. How he is in an airport. If he's been telling you that he travels for business all the time, I'll tell you how to know if it's true. And he's not screwing around. He's really on business trips. He knows where the lounges are. And he has membership to those lounges, and that's where you go before the flight. You don't want to be with a man who does not have at least 8 airport lounges in his wallet. Cards to get into at least 8. The Good American Express Club, plus all the specific memberships, because one day you're going to be delayed. It's going to be 7:25 in the evening, and they're saying you're not going anywhere till 11. You need to be in a lounge when that happens, because suddenly around you in the airport, everybody's going to hit the floor. They're going to start lying down. stretching out. They're going to take five seats and stretch out. You don't deserve that. You need to be in a proper first-class lounge, a Clipper Club lounge. Not just the first-class lounge, the Clipper Club lounge. The Admirals, not the Admirals Club. What do they call it? American has one above the Admirals Club. What do they call that? Those are the tests. Now, are you topless at a topless beach? Do you ask your wife, girlfriend to be topless at a topless beach? These are things America needs to know. And the number to call in is 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. And I look forward to speaking with you and for you to sharing all of this. This is the live stream. The live stream is 855-839-1210. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night. Come on, is alive. Neon lights flicker. The patrons talking jive. Bullets over trailer parks under the moonlight sky. Detective Vic Ferrari always gets his guy.
Hey, Walter. On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, there's trouble in paradise again with the New York City Police Department. A top NYPD official in charge of transportation is under investigation for an alleged hit and run of a parked car, and then he tried to cover it up. Frank Sepulveda, or Sepulveda, depending on your pronunciation, the NYPD's director of traffic, allegedly sideswiped a car near the division's Midtown headquarters on April 3rd, and later instructed a city worker to file a false report about the incident, according to two sources familiar with this probe. Now, the department's Internal Affairs Bureau was investigating both the crash and the alleged cover-up, a police spokesman has confirmed. Now, after the crash, a department traffic manager who typically parks Sepulveda's car noticed the damage, and who knew NYPD members have valets, according to a union source familiar with the probe. Sepulveda allegedly told the manager to say the car had not been damaged while parked in a nearby police department lot, the union source said. Internal Affairs later interviewed the worker and played surveillance footage of the crash during questioning. Sepulveda, a 38-year NYPD veteran, is currently in charge of everything from crackdown on so-called ghost license plates to setting up stings in areas with repeat offenders. Now, Sepulveda has a reputation as a strict boss who has repeatedly disciplined subordinates for crashes involving their department vehicles, according to union officials and NYPD records. Sepulveda, who earned nearly $200,000 in 2024, did not respond to calls, texts, or emails seeking comment. Well, no kidding. He's definitely going to have a right to remain silent, and he certainly will. Here's the thing, boys and girls. As I've always said with the NYPD, when you stay around in a place too long, things go sideways. And eventually, everyone outlives their usefulness. Now, it sounds, according to these reports, that he was somewhat of a hard ass with his subordinates. So, it's reasonable to believe that when he got his hand caught in the cookie jar, there were several people willing to step forward and drop a dime on him. You know, my dad wasn't a member of the New York City Police Department, but he did give me a piece of advice when I was a young man that I didn't quite understand at the time. He used to tell me, Vic, you can always spot a supervisor who was a scam artist. And I said, what do you mean by that, Dad? And he said, it's the guy that's always looking over your shoulder and always checking up on you and hammering you for things that they used to do, and they're worried that you're doing it. So it seems like this deputy inspector's got a whole lot of questions to answer, and hopefully he'll get to keep his pension. So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Presumption and Dysfunction.
You want me to read this? Well, okay. The drive-thru brew making its return, I guess. From the vault. You're not gonna hear this anywhere else. It's on the way, coming up on Sterling every damn night.
More than just the headlines. Sterling every damn night.
855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. Woman, topless beach. I believe that if you go to a topless beach, by law, you should be topless. Jim in Wisconsin, welcome to Sterling Every Damn Sunday. Hello, Jim.
Thank you for answering my phone call.
How may I help you, Jim?
We're talking about the women and whether or not they should be bare-breasted at a bare-breasted beach.
Correct.
I believe they should be.
By law?
Not by law. It should be just common sense.
Well, now you're asking for a lot, Jim.
Well, certainly. We always have to ask for the stars and get a little bit less.
Have you been to a topless beach in your life? Have you been to one?
In Jamaica. That's
did Jamaica? That's did Jamaica? No, but I tried. Now, did you? that's terrible. It's awful. In Jamaica, there was. You know, it's funny. I was in Jamaica and I didn't see a topless beach. How did you feel when you were surrounded by topless women?
I thought it was a wonderful vacation. Absolutely fantastic.
Were you with a woman who was topless?
Yes, I was with my girlfriend at the time, and she was reluctant. And I said, "You have great bazooms. Get them out there, and let everybody have a look."
Common sense, Jim. You are a very bright man. You must have had a very successful life so far.
No, not really.
Is that why you're listening to AM radio on Labor Day weekend?
That's probably the reason. Yes, on Labor Day weekend, listening to AM radio. I'm from Wisconsin, and you're in New York.
There we go, buddy. Hey, thank you very much for listening to Sterling Every Damn Sunday. I appreciate it. Thank you, sir, for calling 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. And you see that, Mr. Advertiser? I'm able to reach the entire country live on a Labor Day weekend. There's nothing else. What, are you going to waste your money on cable TV? That's a lot of shenanigans. And the other fact is about radio on the weekends, and most of the time in any given city, this radio station has more listeners than any cable news station has viewers in this city. That's the only statistic you need to know. And when I share this information with a Midnight Misfit, you know what they do? They say, shut up. Just stop it. I'll buy something just so you'll stop it. And then we have a successful sale. What your media people call engagements. How are the engagements? The engagements on talk radio is stunning. It's amazing. That's why there are over 1,000 talk stations. It's because people buy stuff. And so people buy stuff. You're running a retail business. You've got to buy advertising time on this station because it will. What? What's the magic word? It'll work. The name of the show is Sterling Every Damn Sunday. And the phone number is 855-839-1210. That is the live stream. That is the live feed. 855-839-1210.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Live from the laundry room, Walter M. Sterling, and in seconds, conspiracy theories.
Sterling every night, lost in space, mission control.
You know, we have to increase the number of times you talk about conspiracy theories, Dave. Dave Scott,
okay.
Known Canadian, host of Spaced Out Radio, national Canadian radio show, a great broadcaster and journalist. Dave Scott hosts Spaced Out Radio. You can hear all of his Spaced Out Radio episodes on YouTube. But the reason we need to increase the number of conspiracy theory episodes is that John Katsimatidis, who owns WABC in New York, loves conspiracy theories, believes in conspiracy theories, and is attracted to them. We want to do things that attracts John Katsimatidis, don't we, Dave Scott?
Well, then let's get into a music conspiracy theory.
Fabulous. Yes, go.
The 27 Club. Have you ever heard of this, Walter?
Jimmy Morrison.
That's one.
Who else?
Jimi Hendrix. Janis Joplin. Kurt Cobain. And many more.
Many more.
Now, the last one that really hit home on the conspiracy theory of the 27 Club, which we will explain what it is in a moment, is Amy Winehouse. When she was 27 years old, she passed away of a narcotics overdose. So what is the 27 Club? Well, it's a conspiracy theory that many of these singers sold their soul for fame and fortune, only to have it end very tragically at the age of 27. And in fact, there is a website called 27club.com that you can check out every singer and musician who passed away at the age of 27. And realistically, there's over, I think, 150 names on this list that just died at the age of 27 for some unknown reasons, some accidents. Some it was drug overdosed and self-induced with alcohol, like Jim Morrison, or others. And it is one of the scariest points for a lot of musicians where they're like, if I could just make it past 27, I can make it in this business. So the 27 Club is very, very much a conspiracy theory in music.
Now, why, if it's a conspiracy, that means somebody's doing it. Somebody is killing them. They're not just sleazeball drug addicts. Somebody's doing this. Why would they be doing this?
Well, I mean, some think it's because of legend, okay? Because if you die young, then what happens is your music goes on forever and you become a legend. So this is one of the theories that goes along with this, is maybe, just maybe, it was to immortalize these musicians like Jim Morrison or Jimi Hendrix, so that way their music would play on forever. I mean, most people don't know, if you look at Jimi Hendrix, for instance, that he was only on the music scene for 2.5 years. When I found that out, I was mortified because I thought he had been around for a long, long time. Now, people who are in their 60s and 70s would be like, well, I knew that he was only there for 2.5 years. But for us younger crowd, we didn't know. Because his music was legendary. The way he would make a guitar weep was absolutely magnificent. And with all the songs that came out that he put out, it was like, wow, this guy had to be around for a long time. But no, it was only 2.5 years.
How do you feel about this?
Well, I think it's a little weird. I mean, it seems to have better term, and a pun intended, it seems to have died off since Amy Winehouse. You know, I mean there doesn't seem to be as many artists passing away, because maybe it's because it's more business like now, whereas music before was, you know, free, and it was do your own thing, record what you want. That's what you did. You went from festival to festival, concert to concert, much like the Grateful Dead or the Dave Matthews Band. But today it seems like it's more business-like. So it's less drugs, more business.
What about the Tragically Hip in Canada?
Well, that's not a conspiracy theory, but I know you love the Hip. So do I.
Did any of them die at 27?
No, none of them did. Gord Downie was the lead singer. He passed away from brain cancer a few years ago. But the legend lives on of the Tragically Hip up here, in the northern part of Canada.
What about the Moffats?
I think they were a one-hit wonder. Nobody even talks about them anymore.
Are you impressed that I, as an American, know about not only the Tragically Hip, but the Moffats?
Well, more so the Tragically Hip, I'm very impressed with. You know, I mean, that's just great Canadiana right there.
I can't believe how big a deal they are in Canada, and they didn't seep into the lower 48 at all. I because they're a great band, and the right people love them in Canada. I'm really surprised there was no distribution push into the United States.
Well, the lead singer of Pearl Jam, Eddie Vedder, was a giant tragically hip fan. And he even stated that the biggest tragedy in American music is that the American music industry had never learned about the tragically hip. And it bugged him right up until the day Gord Downie passed away. And in fact, after Gord Downie passed away, Eddie Vedder did many tributes to Gord Downie and the Tragically Hip during Pearl Jam concerts.
Isn't it interesting that Eddie Vedder is like the coolest rock star there ever was? He seems perfectly normal, yet you know he must have a wild rock and roll life.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of musicians are like that, though, is they put on this persona that they, you know, that they are larger than life and that every day is a party and every day is just go, 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 go. And Eddie just, and many others are just seem to be more resilient and laid back. Like the gentleman who does my music for Spaced Out Radio, a gentleman, he was ranked number 8 in the world for guitarists that are currently playing. His name's Ron Bumblefoot Ball. He played with Guns N' Roses. He played with a couple other bands. And you look at somebody like him where it's all about the music. It's business. It's not about, you know, sitting back and having a few drinks. I remember being on his tour bus in Vancouver one night. And we're all sitting around, and I thought we'd have a few shots of vodka or a couple of beers. And no, no, no. It was all Gatorade and candy and, you know, just like you would see after a kid's sports team, you know, goes and plays a game, and then you're sitting around with the kids, and they all want to go to Dairy Queen. I mean, that's what it was like.
Eddie Vedder, once a year, takes Pearl Jam to a special education school, a special education high school, and does a free concert for those kids every year. And he knows the kids' names. He knows their names. And they know him.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's
that is amazing.
I know, he's pretty amazing. And like, he's one of those rock stars that if we let our imagination run wild, that if we met him, we could be friends. Now, that would never happen because he knows that we're phonies. But we'd look at him, his approachability is that, gee, I think we could actually be friends.
Yeah, and it's the same way with my music guy, Ron Fall. You know, I mean, when I met him, I'd seen him on stage performing with Guns N' Roses a couple of times. You know, he was right there with the band right before the reunion happened in 2016. He left in 2014. And I can tell you this.
Mm.
1 second here.
You having trouble with the phone? New tech.
Oh, you scared my son just scared the living daylights out of me.
Is it an alien?
Well, he kind of looks like an alien, but I thought there was a black bear walking by. It happened to be my son.
Tell Midnight Misfits where you live.
Well, right now, I am down in Abbotsford, British Columbia, visiting my father. Abbotsford is my hometown. It's about an hour drive east of Vancouver. But normally, I live in the Cariboo region of British Columbia, which is about central BC, where you need to watch out for bears and cougars and deer and moose in your yard.
Right. See, you and your son are scared of bears. Last night, I have three daughters. Last night, I hear the scream from one of their rooms. There was a tiny wood spider that freaked them out, and they were going crazy trying to find it and kill it with, ready, hairspray. They were trying to kill it with hairspray. I had to put an end to that. How do we find you online, my friend?
SpaceOutRadio.com. info@SpaceOutRadio.com is the email. And, of course, please hit subscribe on our YouTube channel, Spaced Out Radio.
SpacedOutRadio.com. We love Pearl Jam and their only hit, Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday.
Sometimes you want to go where nobody knows the manager's name. And the service is really lame. You want to go where nobody actually cares about you. You want to go to drive-thru brew.
Well, I'm J.J. Wilson with a special edition of Drive-Thru Brew.
Now, not everyone who stops at the drive-thru brew buys beer, wine, or candy. Let's listen as young Jake attempts to guide a lost and, well, not too bright, motorist.
Can I help you, sir?
Yeah, I'm confused, darn it. Could you tell me how to get to Route 22?
Okay. Go east on this road and turn left at the third light, then go about...
East. Would that be this way or that away?
No, that way is west. You want to go towards the gas station.
Gas station?
Yeah, it's right there. See the big sign?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, west for three blocks, then right at the light?
No, east until you get to the third light and then left.
Left. That's right. And how many blocks was it?
Excuse me one second. Mr. Manager, this guy's dumber than a Gilligan's Island rerun. Could you take over? He needs directions.
Sure. Where are you trying to go, sir?
Well, I was trying to get to my bank, but maybe I could go someplace less complicated.
I see. Well, hey, there's a McDonald's directly across the street. Would you like to go there?
Well, sure. How do I get there?
Hey, is there anybody out there who could walk this guy across the street? Meanwhile, listen next time when the manager says...
By the way, mister, what do you do for a living?
Oh, me? I'm a retired airline pilot. Did it for just one morning, but for some reason, they just let me go.
That's next time on Drive-Thru Brew. Word Car speaking.
Lesbians in space.
Date idea, since football season is coming up, we watch every single football game together, and whenever there's a first down, we kiss. Because who doesn't love football and kissing? I know I do.
Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night.
Walter Sterling.
America.
at the Bridge School. Pearl Jam once a year goes to the Bridge School, a special ed school with remarkable children, and he sings to them, and he knows them, and they know him. That's a star. That's a star. It's kind of easy to be a rock star, but to be a life star, Eddie Vedder is a life star because of the contributions that he makes to special need kids. I have a challenged kid, but boy, she doesn't seem challenged. She is remarkable. She's 13. She's autistic. She has apraxia. What is apraxia? It's severe speech delay. And she has autism, but autism's on such a remarkable spectrum that she's outgoing. She's the best friend you're ever going to have. She will be your friend. She is socially outgoing, but academically, she suffers from autism. And academically, she's 13. She reads and writes like, I don't know, kindergarten. She's pretty good at math. But she has memory problems. She can learn something well today, not really remember it the next day, remembers it 2 days later. It skips. Her memory skips. She will be fine because she's socially outgoing. But autistically, challenged academically, we're trying to keep her in the best school she's ever had. What a blessing. And I figured I could count on my relatives. Boy, was I an idiot.
Public Selling Radio. Sterling every damn night.
All right, good evening, Midnight Misfits. Here we are. We don't belong. That's why you're listening to the radio on Labor Day weekend on a Sunday night. Because if you're married and you got kids, hopefully they're asleep or playing Roblox or Minecraft. Which is it, Roblox or Minecraft, or worse, Toca Boca? Are they making or watching Toca Boca anime? If you're an actual parent, you know exactly what I'm talking about, and you're hoping they're not watching Toca Boca, because Toca Boca is what? It's filled with dirty words and really interesting relationships. Single moms and Legos. Yes, relationships between single moms and Legos. You and I were talking with Michael Richman, a Midnight Misfit, and Michael pointed out that the airline I was trying to think of moments ago, the Australian airline, which is fantastic, is Qantas. I will now share with you some airline porn. Twice I was invited to go to Australia on business, and both times, they said, what would it take to get you to come to Melbourne to speak to us? And I said, two words, first class. And I flew to Australia to Melbourne, first class on Qantas. This is very different than going to Detroit. It's very different than leaving out of MCO, Kansas City, to Orlando. Very different thing. In first class on a 747 Qantas plane, because remember, these are real international planes. They're going from L.A. to Sydney, Australia. These aren't really interesting planes. These are hardcore. You got to be comfortable for 14 hours. They can't deal with a hostile group of people like on Frontier going to Vegas. There is no more hostile group than people going from anywhere to Vegas in the United States. They're drunk. They're furious. They've either lost or they're about to lose. They heard about a table where they might be able to win rent. They might be able to get in to see Pawn Stars. And then when all else fails, they've lost their money. They say, you know what? Let's go see the Pawn Stars pawn shop. And they go in Vegas on the way to the airport. It's on the way to the airport, which is sort of poetic. And the people they see on Pawn Stars on TV, they're not there. Those are TV stars. They're going to hang around a pawn shop? No, no, no. They have zillions of dollars. And the old man, he died years ago. And Chumley may be on parole. I don't know. Still skinny. Hard to say. But they're not there. Therefore, most trips to Vegas are a bust. And they only go back. People only go back to Vegas from Detroit, Miami, wherever, when they have forgotten what happened last time. The only times I've ever been to Vegas has been for, quote, work. And it's 2 days tops. You go to Vegas for 2 days and you're done. It seems like such a wonderful idea until you're halfway through the first day and you're exhausted just from going from the lobby to your room. Going from the lobby to the room in Vegas, that is exhausting all on its own. Nothing you want to experience. And then, gee, maybe, you know, at the airport, you've got some dollars left and you bet the dollar slots at the airport. Is there anything sadder than being in Vegas, having lost everything, and being at the airport thinking you'll make it back? Qantas is the airline that I was trying to remember before. And let me tell you, I have to share this pornography, this airline pornography with you. In the first class seats, which I explained I did not pay for, I was gifted so that I'd come and speak and share what I share with you freely. Gifts I give to you freely, I charge them a first class ticket. The seats in first class in Qantas, you can get up and you have to walk to the seat in front of you. You cannot touch it with your hands. You cannot sit up straight and touch it with your feet. No, the only way to reach the seat in front of you is to get up and walk to it. And then when it's time to go to sleep, and who knows when that is on a plane, they lower the lights and your seat goes all the way back like a bed, a better bed than you have, unless you got it from MyPillow. And they make the bed and they hand you pajamas and you go to the bathroom, you put on your pajamas and your slippers and you come back out. Your bed's all made and there's a sleeping mask, snacks, whatever you need to get to sleep. And that's how you sleep on Qantas. And then when it's time to get up, very quietly they wake you, unlike your children. And there you are. It is an incredible experience. You get to choose from hundreds of different movies in the menu. It's a real restaurant menu for this meal and that meal. There's a staff on Qantas I've never seen on any other airline before. There's a purser. There's a man or a woman in charge of what all of the flight attendants do and to make sure they're doing it on time. It's a purser. And under the stairs of the 747 is a purser's desk. They actually have an office desk where the purser sits there and manages everything. Think of Frontier to Detroit, and now think of the opposite. That's what it is. It's incredible. And I wondered what the difference was between an Admiral's Club and a flagship lounge, because I was always haunted. I used to fly American a lot, and I'd stay in the Admiral's Club, which I was very happy in. But I always knew over there, there was this other door, this frosted glass door that said flagship lounge. I'm like, what do I have to do to get into the flagship lounge? I was a million miler on American Airlines. I was never in the flagship lounge. And Michael Richman, Midnight Misfit, pointed out that it was called the flagship lounge. And these are the amenities. This is just to get you hot and bothered. Ready? The features of the amenities of the flagship lounge include higher quality amenities like chef-inspired meals. Question, what meals aren't chef-inspired? Just going on. Personalized service, premium wine tastings, premium wine tables, specialty cocktail bars, which I guess are those drinks that smoke and are made out of Curacao liqueur, so they're blue and have lilacs in them for some reason. And then they have shower suites. Yes, like a truck stop, like a Love truck stop, there are shower suites in the flagship lounge. The drinks offer a more elevated culinary experience with complimentary hot food, premium spirits, nicer wines, and champagne. It provides a higher quality of service, personalized service, compared to an Admiral's Club. Admiral's Club at some point is just déclassé. Accessibility. Well, how do I get into the flagship lounge? Always the question, isn't it, my friend? Primarily for travelers in first or business class on long-haul international premium transcontinental or select Hawaii flights, and for One World Emerald Sapphire status holders. Well, I'm a Sapphire holder. Hi, why can't I go there? Can I go there? For me, that's a whole reason to go to the airport, is to go to the flagship lounge, which I've never been in, feeling denied. But thank you, Michael Richman, for amping up my objects of desire, my airport objects of desire, always those rooms that you don't know if you can get into, that other people seem to be going into with ease, but then when you get to it, the door slams. All of those problems that you had with clubs in the 90s, well, there they are in the airport waiting for you and waiting for me. Walter M. Sterling. This is a live radio show. You got it? WGAN, KGGF, KMOX, live radio show. It's the way it's supposed to be, even on the Labor Day weekend. Sterling every damn Sunday.
I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories. Thank you. Yeah, you think I'd run out of stories? No, no. Entire forests have been wiped out by the paper I've wasted in Florida Stories I didn't use. So let's get started with this week.
Hold my beer.
Well, in Sarasota, a thrift store employee was going through a big old plastic tote, and he found almost 5 pounds of marijuana.
Smoke weed every day.
Now, I imagine Cheech over here is either extremely charitable but horribly misled about how the donation process works, or what's probably the more likely scenario, some idiot grabbed the wrong tote. When he gets to the next drug deal, why does he just have a case full of old blue jeans and a Ghostbusters 2 t-shirt? He's in big trouble.
Hold my beer.
A Florida mom beats up her 12-year-old son for not doing his homework, according to cops. And this one got caught on video. Dad was videoing this at the house. Apparently, he has her slapping around the kiddo, slapping around the siblings, and slapping him around a couple times. Actually beat him with a video game controller. Very Florida of you. And if you're interested in playing your own personal game of racial bingo, her name is Charlene Hidalgo. Go stew on that. Is that not the perfect Florida name for you? But Charlene's in a tough position. You know, if you don't take any interest in your kid's education and you don't force them to do their homework, you're a bad parent. But then all of a sudden, if you do, you know, she just can't win, can she?
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going down to Ocala. A Florida couple was arrested last week after they were allegedly caught selling drugs out of a drive-thru window they constructed out of the side of their mobile home. This is like 4 degrees of Florida. This is amazing. Selling drugs, living in a mobile home. You're so lazy that you can't even have the people come into your living room. You just want them to drive around. And you should see the mugshots. This girl, what is wrong with me? This woman's beautiful. It gets worse.
Hold my beer.
We go to Land O'Lakes, Florida. Is that where they make the butter? Pasco County Sheriff's Detectives arrested inmate Billy. This is the most evil thing you're going to hear all day. Sometimes Florida's lighthearted and goofy or whimsical. This is scary stuff. This guy's in jail for doing untoward things toward a minor. Can we just leave it at that? And if that wasn't enough, when he got in jail, he was trying to convince his celly to kill her and her family so he could get off on the charges. This has to be like in the top 10 most evil people on the planet. Good Lord. Can we have a better one? Yeah, it gets better.
Hold my beer.
A Florida woman's home was shot up after she leaves negative reviews about a restaurant on Facebook. The restaurant owner's son was driving an SUV and shot the home about 3 times before driving away. All of this was over a dispute on Facebook. She said the restaurant workers were unnecessarily rude. Well, I say they're a lot worse than that. You know, unnecessarily rude, that's really lowballing attempted murder. She had no idea how bad these people were. Should have kept her mouth shut. Just go to a different restaurant.
Hold my beer.
You know, I remember one time when I was growing up, my dad woke me up early and we go down fishing at the creek. And this one day he slipped on a mud patch and just fell in the creek. It's a great father-son memory here. Well, in Florida, it's a little different. Tampa Bay Times are reporting that William Porter of Zephyrillis is charged with second-degree murder. And in a Florida twist on the story, he wakes his daughter up early one day. Hey, honey, you awake? Come on, get up. We got to go bury a body. You know, it's just another one of those wacky father-son kind of things or father-daughter moments. Just a little more Florida than what we're used to.
Hold my beer.
Finally. Check this one out. A massage therapist arrested for sexual assault in Port Charlotte. All right, Florida. We're hitting on a good one here, right? Charlotte County, Florida. After a hard day of work, a local businessman strolls into the massage parlor. Been there before? Asks for his favorite masseuse. Falls asleep, probably having some good dreams. When he wakes up, he finds the masseuse massaging the most important body part a man has. One problem, the masseuse is a dude. One little detail takes the best story of the day and makes it absolutely horrifying.
Wait, hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
I'm a beer. What?
Florida Stories is produced by Spring Rock. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
They call him Sterling, Sterling, every damn night. No, no one you know makes better radio. You know Sterling, Sterling is life on the bar. If the noise level is higher, it's probably just the dryer.
Well, you have to have another day of heck because you're stuck with the family until tomorrow night. You don't get to go back to fun tomorrow. You get to stay with the family. And you ready? Help pack the car. One of the great tests of any marriage is packing the car. One person in the family, it doesn't have to be the mom or dad, it can be someone else, has a fantasy of being in charge of packing the car. I have never had this fantasy. I want nothing to do with it. I always want to hire a guy to pack the car. Why can't we hire that service? You know, Angie's List and all that crap, that overpriced nonsense. Why can't we hire a guy to pack the car for us and then hand us the keys and say, oh, by the way, I vacuumed out the car for you. It smells really fresh as well. Why can't we have that? A service to back the car at the end of a 2-3-4 week vacation? Is that what you and I deserve to do? Is to pack up the car? I don't think so. I have an email. It's WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. A great website, Walter Sterling Show. And the greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help. Email WalterMSterling@gmail.com. I answer every email. I've got a pretty good website, WalterSterlingShow.com, WalterSterlingShow.com. And the greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help.
Now the credit roll for Sterling Every Damn Night, featuring the extreme talent of Dave Scott, Thea Landon, Charles Van Zandt, Peter Thiel, Dan and Becky Gaffney, Dave Iger, Sean Serino, Father James Drucker, Jill Brook, Steve and Selena, Alexander Castiles, David Yargaroff, Gene Stalker, Vic Ferrari, starring Walter Sterling, and I'm your announcer, James Copeland, a KWMDS production.